them down with our days.
We started near the end. We started the next discussion, but we didn't get very far into it. So we'll restart from the beginning of it. Nine lines from the bottom line because I'm actually one. Okay, we learned in the Mishnah that if the windpipe of an animal has a piece missing from it, then the animal is treif only if the piece that's missing is the size of an iser, which is a kind of coin. We said before in Bavel that we're familiar with that, but they have other coins that are similar size. We don't know exactly. The Rishonim say we don't really know what the size of it is. Anyway, whatever it is. And we also had earlier in the Perek, we had a case over there where if there's a hole in a skull, where Bithilo says how much would be needed for the skull to not be metame ba'oihol, as it's talking about a skull of a person, would be if there's a piece of it missing the size of a sella. And we learned near the beginning of our parak that the same Shmuel had said the same rule applies to treifa. If we say that a piece the size of a sella missing from a human skull makes it that it's not considered a complete skull anymore, therefore it's not metame ba'oihol, It's a coin. We learned earlier. We had a machlok that's Rashi and Tosfos whether it's one third of a cell, whether it's one third of a tefach in diameter or two thirds of a tefach. We had in connection with when you take a hole, the size of a cell, and you stretch it out, then we mean that the sides of the hole, the circumference of the hole, we're doing it. Two thirds of it. Anyway, the point is that we had those cases. So Amar Rav Nachman, Kisela, Kiyosim Kisela. When we say a sella, that means if the hole is exactly the size of a sella. So for example, you can't fit an actual sella coin in there because it's exactly the same size diameter, and you can't get something of the same size diameter into exactly that hole. It's considered Kiyosim Kisela. It's the equivalent of if it was more than a sella, therefore the animal will still be treif. And similarly, ke'iser ke'yosim ke'iser. The same thing when we say if there's an iser-sized piece missing of the windpipe, an iser exactly is the same as more than an iser, and the animal will already be treif. Alma kasavar Rav Nachman ad v'loy ad b'chlal. So therefore, we see from that, Rav Nachman evidently holds that when we say that something is kosher ad until such and such, for example, it means v'loy ad b'chlal. It means not inclusive. It doesn't include that actual amount. So if we said in our Mishnah that Rav Shimon Gamliel said ad to iser, so it means up to but not including the actual size of an iser. Now, by the sella, it doesn't actually say the words ad to sella. So the Tosfos discusses a little bit whether we're actually talking about that or whether we're talking about another case that we're going to talk about on Nun Hei Amud Beis involving a sella. Other Rishonim say, okay, even though it doesn't actually say ad kasella, that's what it amounts to. Okay, anyway, the point is, so Rav Nachman seems to be saying ad v'loy ad b'chlal. Eisvei Rava l'Rav Nachman, so Rava says to Rav Nachman, I have a contradiction on you from a Mishnah. A Mishnah says in Kalim, if you have a rope sticking out from a bed, beds in those days were made, you had a wooden frame, you would weave a rope back and forth through holes in the frame in order to make like a network, right? And then you would put a mattress and whatever on top of it. So in the end, you might have a piece of rope sticking out at the end. Rope in and of itself is not metabol truma, it's not a kavi. But if you have, in this case, where it's sticking out of the bed, so sometimes it has a use. Ad chamisha tefachim tohur. If that piece of rope that's sticking out is up to 5 tefachim in length, then it's tohur. It's not makabel tumah because you can't use it for anything useful. So my lav chamisha kilamata. So says Rava, shouldn't we assume that it means that up to means including 5? If the rope is exactly 5 tefachim, it's also not makabel tumah, which would mean that ad is va'ad b'chlal. It is inclusive. And the answer is no, not necessarily chamisha kilamayla. Maybe what the Mishnah means is if it's up to 4.99. Let's say not 0.99. Fine, they couldn't measure that accurately. Let's say if it's a little less than five, then it would be tahor. Then it would not be makabel tumah. But if it's exactly 5, then it is. Okay, so no proof.
So if there's a hair sticking out of the rope and makes it 5 inches?
No, because the hair of a pastress wouldn't be something useful. We're going to say in a second what the rope is useful for. One fiber sticking out of the rope is not going to be useful. Okay, Toshma, Meheva Adasaratome. Okay, the continuation of the Mishnah says that if it's from 5 to 10 tefachim long, then it is Makabel Tumah. And the reason for that is Rashi brings from the Mishnah over there two things. First of all, when the rope is between 5 and 10 tefachim long, first of all, you can use it to lower the bed. If you need to get the bed from point A to point B, and you need to, let's say, lower it out a window or something, a rope that's sticking out from it between 5 and 10 tefachim is handy for that kind of purpose. Less than 5 tefachim is not useful. It's too short to hold on to. More than 10 tefachim is also not really useful. You don't need the extra part above 10. Also, another reason is because we know that in Mitzrayim, they had to tie the Korban Pesach to their bed 4 days in advance. In later generations, when they brought the Korban Pesach, you know they didn't have to do that. Technically, you could buy the animal even right then on Erev Pesach. People had a minhag, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, to do that also. They'd buy the animal a couple of days in advance and tie it to their bed. So again, a rope between 5 and 10 tefachim long is useful for that kind of purpose. Less than 5 is not, you can't use it for that. So again, my lav asara kilamata. L'chorda, the Mishnah means that if the rope is exactly 10 tefachim long, then it's the same as being less than 10, and it would mean that it's still makabel tuma. And then it says, no, asara kilamayla. No, not necessarily. Maybe the Mishnah means if it's exactly 10, then already it's not makabel tuma. Okay. So still no proof. Toshma, we're going to bring proof from another case also involving Hilchos Tumah Tahara, also a Mishnah from the Masechta Kelim. Hadakin shebeklei cheres, small earthenware containers. So now you have like this. You have two different cases. The Rashi and Tosfos discuss at some length over here what exactly the situation is. But basically, you have two situations with klei cheres. Number one, you have when the klei cheres is whole, a complete keli. What's the minimum size of it that would be makabel tuma? Number two, you can have if you have a larger klei cheres which broke. The pieces of it might be useful for some
to cover something up, let's say as a temporary container.
Or whatever. Yeah. So hadakin shibik klei cheres, when you have small klei cheres, hein, whether the first of all, learn like Rashi, whether the keli as a whole holds even if the keli itself holds only a small amount, even just enough oil to be able to smear on a child, as we're going to say in a second. The Kauterate Sehen, or also, let's say the Kaili broke and you have the base, the bottom of the Kaili left, or the Dofne Sehem, or you have a piece of the wall of the Kaili left, which is still intact, Yoshvin Shalom Sumachin, where the shape of that base or the shape of that piece of wall is such that it's able to sit flat on the ground or on a table without needing something else to hold it up. So in all those cases, it's still considered a Kaili. Therefore, Shi'uran Mikdeh Sichas Cotton. So then the shear for them is if they're able to hold the amount of oil that you would need to smear on a little child, which actually doesn't even mean the whole baby. Actually, what it means is the Rishonim bring from other relevant Gemaras. It means even just one little limb, like a little toe or something of a newborn baby. Yes. So it would actually be a very small amount. It would be the amount actually the Rambam, for example, brings would be 1/64 of a log. Now a log is around 12 to 16 ounces because the Revius is about 3 or 4 ounces. So if let's say we say a log is about 12 ounces, which is close to, a log is about 12 ounces because the Revius we consider to be about 3 ounces. So 1/64 of that would be something like 1/5 of an ounce. So if the Kaili, so that's
12 ounces maximum. A log.
From the Kedei Sichas Cotton, the Ad Log, in other words, the Kedei Sichas Cotton, the rule is that there would be still Makabel Tumah if they're able to hold enough oil, the Kedei Sichas Cotton, it's 1/5 of an ounce, let's say. The Ad Log, this rule applies as long as the original Kaili was able to hold up to a log. If the original Kaili had a capacity larger than a log, then you need the broken pieces of it need to be larger than that in order to be Makabel Tumah. In other words, what we do is, so Rashi says, what we're telling us is two different things. Number one, if you have a small keli, that is only the minimum size of a keli to be makabel tuma, when it's whole, would be kedei sichas katan. If you were to make an earthenware keli that holds less than that, Rashi learns it would not be makabel tuma. Again, let's say that's 1/5 of an ounce, let's say. Yeah, let's say, no, we said like a little toe or something. So we're calculating 1/64 of a log. So let's say you were to make a kli cheres that when it's intact holds less than that, Rashi would learn it's not makabel tuma. And second of all, what we're saying is if you have a keli that holds anywhere from kedei sichas katan up to a log, then if it breaks and you have fragments of it left that are able to hold kedei sichas katan, then they're still makabel tuma as long as they're able to stand up on a table without needing something else to hold them up. Tosfos discusses at some length about all the ins and outs of that. Among other things, we're not necessarily saying the first part that Rashi says, which is that a keli has a minimum size to be tamei. If you were to make, according to Tosfos, if you were to make a keli that holds less than that to begin with, and it's still intact, sure, it would be mekabel tuma. Okay, be that as it may, the question is, my lav log kilamata, shouldn't we assume that the Mishnah means, again, that if a keli holds exactly a log, then the rule still applies that you still have, as long as you have a piece of it left, then that piece is mekabel tuma, which would mean that ab means ab bichlal, it's inclusive. And the answer is log kilamaila. Not necessarily. We could answer that what we mean is up to a log, if it holds anywhere from kedei sichas katan up to, but not including a log, then if you have a broken piece of it, then as long as it holds kedei sichas katan, it's mekabel tuma. But if you have a keli that holds exactly a log, then the broken piece of it has to be larger than that to be mekabel tuma. Because in general, the rule is, the larger the original keli, the larger the fragment of it needs to be that you would bother keeping it around.
How much larger?
That's what we're going to see. That's the next part that we're going to quote. But in other words, that's the premise of it. In other words, what we're saying is, if you started out with a small keli, think of it, to put it in modern terms, I mean, look, in modern terms, when we have a broken keli, we just throw it away because, you know, we live in a wasteful culture. But whatever, anyway, we also live in a more affluent culture, whatever. Anyway, yeah. But let's say, to put it in modern terms, if you have, let's say, for example, a can of Coke and broke, fine, you might keep around a small piece of it to use for something. But if you had, let's say, something like, if you had, let's say, I don't know, something the size of one of those big cholent pots or whatever, and it broke, you wouldn't bother keeping such a small piece of it. If you had a larger piece of it, you'd keep it for something. So that's the premise behind it. Okay. So again, Toshma, come, let's look at the next part of that Mishnah. Milug ad sa'a b'raviyas. If the original keli held anywhere from a lug up until a sa'a, where a saw is six kavim and a kav is six logim, so you're talking 24 logim, then birivis, then the amount, the fragment, the minimum size of a fragment that would still be makabel tuma would be larger. It would have to hold at least birivis. A log is around a pint, give or take, 12 ounces, 16 ounces, something like that. So therefore, yeah, so it would have to hold a birivis, 3 or 4 ounces. So again, my lav saw kilamata, again, Bechora, what we mean is that up to and including a saw, if the original keli held a saw, then as long as the fragment holds at least the revius, it's a kabel tuma. And again, the answer is loy saw kilamayla, not necessarily. Maybe it means, again, that from a saw and higher begins a new measurement, and you'd have to have a larger piece. Okay? Toshma, the next part of the Mishnah continues, misaw bad sosayin b'chasilug, from a saw up to two saw, the minimum piece that's still makabel tuma is one that holds a half a log. Again, my lav sasayim kilamata. And the answer again is loy sasayim kilamayla. Again, what we mean is beginning from two saw and up, not 2.01 saw, but 2.00 saw exactly, already has a new din. Okay. So the problem with all that is, with the last couple of answers, v'hatanya log kilamata, saw kilamata, sasayim kilamata, we learn in a braisa that in all these three cases, not like we answered, that beginning from a log and upward has a new din, and beginning from a saw and upward has a new din, and so forth, but rather log kilamata. If the original keli held a log, it has the same status as if it holds less than a log, just less than a log, saw kilamata and sasayim kilamata. So not ad, so in other words, ad is v'ad b'chlal. Reb Nachman told us originally ad v'loy ad b'chlal, that ad means not including the amount we said at the top range, at the top end of the range. But now we see not like that. The Braisa clearly tells us not.
How clear is it?
It says clearly, log kilamata. In other words, when we said, for example, that you start out with a keli that held kedei sichas katan, and you're going all the way up to a log, that means if the original keli held up to and including a log, then it's still, then a fragment of it is still makabel tuma if it holds kedei sichas katan. This 164 here. Log. Yeah. The answer is hasam l'chumra. The answer is that the reason why we say ad b'chlal in those cases is because we're going l'chumra. And in fact, so Rashi learns like this. All of the answers that we were giving up until now to try and for Rav Nachman were not actually given by Rav Nachman himself. Rav Nachman himself never said that ad means v'loy ad b'chlal across the board. Rav Nachman had said just that when it comes to the Kesela and Keister, it means ad v'loy ad b'chlal, but he hadn't specified when you say that and when you say the other. He wanted us to realize that it always means you go l'chumra.
It can be both, really.
Right. So in other words, right. So Rav Nachman, so that's the thing. So Rashi learns that all of the answers we had until now were not Rav Nachman answering. Actually, Tosfos says the same thing. But Rashi says that what it is we all of this wasn't Rav Nachman saying anything. Rav Nachman had just said in the case of the Isser and the Sela, it's Ad V'Ad B'Chlal.
Meaning inclusive.
Meaning inclusive, that an Isser is considered more than an Isser, is considered like more than an Isser in the animal of Tereth and so forth, and same thing with the Sela. On the other hand, all of these cases that we were mentioning over here, so we thought to say that when it means the rope is five tfachim that five tfachim is the same as more than five tfachim, so ad is not inclusive of there, and the same thing with ten, and the same thing with the kalim and whatever. What we're saying is the rule is you always go l'chumra. So Tosfos spells out, in other words, what we mean is, like this, we were trying to answer, in some of these cases, we're saying it means we're being machmir, and in some cases, it means we're being makel. For example, we said chamisha kilamayla, we said asara kilamayla, that if the rope sticking out from the bed is between 5 and 10 tfachim, we said it's the tabal truma, we said asara kilamayla, that maybe if it's exactly 10, means that 10 is already the equivalent of more than 10, and therefore it's not makabal truma, or at least the part more than 10 tfachim is not makabal truma. Maybe now we're not going to say, we're not saying, now the Gemara is taking back everything that said. We always go l'chumra.
In other words,
in the case of the rope, for example, what it would mean is that the rope is not makabel truma if it's less than five tefachim. It's makabel truma if it's anywhere from five, including five itself, all the way until 10, including 10 itself, from 5.0 to 10.0. Only if it's 10.1, then the extra part is not makabel truma.
And the other possibility
as opposed to we thought to say that it's makabel truma up to 9.99, but 10.0 itself is not makabel truma. Now we're saying that no, that would be a kola in that case. So we're saying no.
10.0.
Yeah. The Amar of Abo Amar Rav Yechanan. In fact, Rav Abo says in the name of Rav Yechanan, Kol Shiurei Chachamim LaHachmir. Whenever we have the Chachamim giving us a shir, we have to be machmir in it. Except for the case of a gris when it comes to a blood stain. A gris is, literally, it means the size of a split bean. You have a machloikas exactly what the size of it is, and you have it. It's negated nowadays to Hilchot Nidya. We'll talk about it, Bez Hashem, when we get to Masechta Nidya. And a few months from now, you have different opinions among the Achronim exactly how much it is in modern measurements. You also have even within some of the opinions of Achronim. The Alter Rebbe, for example, mentioned talks about it in Hilchos Nida. You have the Tzemach Tzedek writes in his Chuvas that the Alter Rebbe held that it's the size of a certain Russian coin of that time. But then he used to keep around a coin of that size, a Piatchesk it's called or something, to measure with it. The problem is the size of that coin changed in different times. So the result is you end up that the later post-skim discuss exactly what the altitude of a meant and what it comes out to in practical measurements. One possibility is it's about the size of a dime. Another is about the size of a penny, whatever. You have a couple of different minor variations, a little bit bigger, a little bit smaller. You have a couple of different possible variations. Anyway, the point is, when we sit now, what it is like this. We know minatoda, if a woman has blood coming out of her uterus, then she's tamei as nida or zaba, as the case may be, depending when her cycle it is, as we'll learn about in Masechta Nida. Minatoda, she's tamei only if she actually had hargosha, only if she felt it coming out. Midrabanan, we have a hargosha, that she feels.
Hargosha,
yeah. Midrabanan, we have a whole concept called a kesem, that if she finds a blood stain on her clothing, and that blood stain is a certain minimum size, then she's tamei because the likelihood is that it came from the uterus. How large is that? So that we mentioned in that concept this concept of a gris, but it's actually not a gris itself, but actually slightly more than a gris. So that's what you mean, like lahakos.
Why don't we just say any type and any amount?
The reason is, the Gemara explains nidah over there, because if it's less than a, if it's a gris or less, then there's reason to think it may not have come from her body at all, but rather it may have come from a bug that was squashed.
Right.
The Gemara establishes over there that a bug, which is allowed, or whatever, the amount of blood that can come out of it is up to and including a gris. That's the Gemara talks about it over there.
Any amount could come from the womb.
That's true. But never, since the whole concept is Dirabanan, then therefore the Chachamim themselves, when they set up...
They make you.
Okay, again. Okay, listen. In the whole concept of ksamim is derabanan. Again, midaraisa should be tamei only if there is hargosha.
Right.
This whole concept, she wakes up one morning and finds blood over there, is only midrabanan.
Right.
So when the Rabbanim set up that rule, they said that we're not going to apply it to a gris or less because that could come from a bug. More than a gris inevitably cannot have come from a bug. It has to, therefore, we have to assume it came from her. And once we assume it came from her, the likelihood is it came from the uterus because that's the normal place that blood comes from on a woman. The point being that, so in that case, we say lahakol. In that case, we say that up to a gris means including the size of a gris.
How big is a gris?
A gris, again, according to different opinions, it's somewhere around the size of a dime, maybe a little smaller than that, maybe a little larger, maybe the size of a penny, whatever, something in that rough range. Anyway, okay. Now, what kind of shiurim are we talking about? So Rashi seems to be saying we mean in general, whenever we have something where we're talking ad would mean ba'ad b'chlal or v'loyad b'chlal, inclusive or exclusive, you always have to go l'chumra. Tosfos asks on that from some other cases in Shas, for example, about up to when you can daven. So among the answers that Rishonim give are what we mean over here is that we talk about that you go ad ba'ad b'chlal or ad b'loyad b'chlal. The case may be l'chumra only when you're talking dinim d'araisa. What Rabbi Bo is saying, it's not only k'samim. K'samim are an example of something d'rabbanon where the whole concept exists only d'rabbanon and therefore we make on it. All these cases we were talking about a rope being makabel truma, is something d'araisa. The broken clay cheres, the same thing, and the same thing over here as far as the ister and the sela, we were dealing with dine trefus, which are also daraisa. So in those, we have to be machmir, but when it comes to ksamim, we can be makel. Dekanami, the Gemara says, the katoni allah dahi, because in fact, we have a braisa that tells us exactly on that first mishnah we mentioned about the ropes, hamisha kilamayla, that if the rope is exactly 5 tefachim long, then it's the equivalent of being more than 5 tefachim, so it's makabel truma, asara kilamata, and if it's exactly 10, then it's like less than that. In other words, what we just said. So that's the point. We're machmir over there because we're machmir in both directions over there. When it comes to 5, we say v'loy ad b'chlal, that up to 5 means not including 5, but when we say up to 10, it means including 10 because then that way we're machmir on both sides because they're right. Then we said in the middle.
Why is it hamosha?
So less than 5 is not makabel.
Different than lamata.
That's the point, because once it's 5 tefachim exactly, then already it's useful to be able to hold on to the bed when you're lowering it and to be able to tie your curtain pesach to it. When it's up to 10 tefachim, including 10 tefachim, same thing. When it's more than 10 tefachim long, it's not really useful for that purpose. You don't need any more than ten. So you don't need any more than 10. So therefore, the point beyond 10 tefachim is not makabel truma. But the point where it reaches exactly 10 tefachim is still makabel truma.
It's how much the rope comes out of the
hole. How much it sticks out from the bed? Yeah. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah nitzal hatzchol. We said if the spleen of the animal was removed, then we said it's kosher because the spleen is not a vital organ. Amar Rav Avira Meshmei de Rabba, so Rav Avira tells us in the name of Rabba, Loishonu Elam Nital. That is true, as the Mishnah says, if it was removed, then the animal is kosher. Avol Nikav Trefa, but if the spleen has a hole in it, then the animal is Trefa.
No, it's not so.
You would think Nital would have, why should a hole...
It's Nital, it's not Nikav.
But you would think, if it's Nital is kosher, why should Nikav be any worse? Masiv Rav Yosi Bar Oven, so in fact, Rav Yosi Bar Oven asks on that. The Itamer Rav Yosi Bar Zvida, or some say Rav Yosi Bar Zvida asks on this. In the next perek, we're going to talk about the topic of shechting an animal and there's an unborn animal inside there, where you have, in many cases, the unborn animal itself is mutter to eat without needing shechita of its own. It's called benkura. But you have a case over there, choisech me'uber shememe'eha, if a person reached in to the mother animal while it was alive, and he cut from the fetus that was inside the animal while it was inside, mutter b'achila, then that aver is mutter to eat. Once he shechts the mother, then it's mutter to eat that.
After he shechted her?
No. He didn't shech the mother yet. He reached in, he took a knife and cut off a piece from the unborn baby.
Once she's alive?
The unborn baby, not the mother.
No, I know the unborn baby. He's cutting the unborn baby.
He's cutting the unborn.
He's
cutting,
opening the...
No, he reaches in through the womb. He reaches in through the
womb.
Yeah. Oh. Okay. So he cuts a piece over there. Later on, when he shechts the mother, that piece will also be mutter.
It's not going to be a high?
No, that's what we're going to discuss over there. On the other hand, if he were to reach in inside the mother, into the mother herself, and cut the mother's spleen or its kidneys, So then those pieces, now remember the spleen, and the kidney, we're talking about the spleen over here, but the kidneys also, we said before, not necessarily do injuries to them, make the animal trace. Also, ba'achila, those pieces themselves will be considered eva menachai, and you won't be able to eat them. We'll talk in the next paragraph, we'll discuss the details why that is. But be that as it may, we have that in, implying ha behema gufa shaya. So what's the implication? The mother animal itself is mutter to eat, even though you cut the spleen. The only thing that's also is that piece of the spleen itself that you cut off. That's eva menachai. Now, if you're telling me that, you, Rav Avira, are telling me that nikav treifa, that if the spleen has a hole in it, then the animal is treifa. What do you mean? The mother itself should be treifa. You cut off a piece of the spleen, that should be the equivalent of a hole. The answer is one answer, hu adin da'asila behema nami asira. One possibility is you could answer, yes, as a matter of fact, you're right. In that case, the whole mother will be also to eat because she'll become treif. So why does it mention only that you can't eat from that piece itself? It's just for parallelism. Since the first part, when you cut a piece of the baby, it's saying even that piece is mutter to eat. Tana sefer nami also ba'achila, and the sefer mentions that piece is also to eat. So you could argue, in other words, what it means is not just the whole piece, is it not just that piece, but actually you're right, the whole animal would in fact be also. But in fact, even though it mentioned it only regarding the piece, that's one possibility. In other words, according to that answer, we would say that if the spleen has a hole, or if the spleen was cut, that is worse than the whole thing being missing. If the whole thing is missing, we said in our Mishnah, that's kosher. But if it has a hole, or a piece of it was cut off, that's worse. And the Rashi says the reason is because then it's gonna cause the animal pain, and it's gonna cause the sickness and deterioration in the body as a whole. That's the point. Yeah. Whether it's a whole, yeah,
missing also.
No, missing because it's missing. It's amputated. Whatever. That's not, you know, whatever. You tie off the relevant blood vessels, and you know what I mean, for the problem. The boyisema, or another answer, you could answer nikav lachod v'nechta fachod. You could distinguish between a hole versus cut. You could say that when it has a hole, that's worse than the animal's trait. But if a piece of it was cut off, not necessarily would that make it trait. So therefore, in other words, you could understand the Mishnah and the next parak in the simple sense. The mother animal as a whole is mutter. Only the piece that you cut off is also because of Eiv Menachai. What about Nikav? Because Nikav is worse than Nechtach. Nechtach, as long as it was cut gently, in other words, then it's not so bad. But Nikav, where you have a hole over there, that would be worse.
That's when you went through the belly, actually, of the mother?
Yeah.
To cut her spleen?
Yeah, let's say, well, I don't know, let's say you reached in through the womb or something. I don't know, let's say you cut through the womb and then reached the spleen. I don't know, whatever. Or you stuck your, I don't know, you stuck your hand in through the intestines or whatever. I don't know, whatever, somehow. Okay. All right. Then we said Nikluakloyus. We said another case of the Mishnah. By the way, we're going to talk about later that the spleen actually has two ends to it. It has a thick end and it has a thin end. So this that we're talking about, that a hole in it makes it, this that we're saying, that a hole in it makes it straight, we're going to discuss later that it depends which end of the spleen the hole is in, whether it's in the thick end or the thin end. So we'll get to that later.
Is there two spleens or one?
No, there's no one animal normally has only one.
And the person has two?
A person also has only one. Okay, we said in the Mishnah Nitzlachloyus, we said that if the kidneys of an animal are removed, that's kosher. Alma Rochish Bapapa Mishmei Derav. So Rochish Bapapa says, in the name of one second. Okay. Yeah, Nitzlachloyus. So we learned earlier in the parak, Omar Rochish Bapapa Mishmei Derav, this is one of the Sheb Shmeitzer that we had, that Rochish Bapapa said in the name of Rav, Loksa Bakoya Achas Trefa. If the animal has a deterioration in even one of its kidneys, then it's Trefa. By the way, we need to point out, because that's going to be important for the continuation of the Sugya, what does Loksa mean? Rashi over here explains that it means, for example, it's full of pus. You have many Rishonim, beginning with the Rif, who explain that pus is something different. Loksa would be, for example, that it was injured, or for example, or though they talk about how much of an injury, or for example, that we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, let's say, for example, that you find clear fluid in it, or other such things like that. I take that back. Loksa, according to the Rif and many other Rishonim, including the Rambam, not injury. What it means is, like mismasness that we talked about the other day, where you have that it doesn't have structural integrity anymore, that you pick it up and it falls into pieces. They learn that that's what it means, loksa. According to them, pus that Rashi is mentioning over here would not necessarily make it today. Rashi, Rashi says, Loksa Bakoya could go in Malya Mogla, for example, it's full of pus. The Rif and many other Rishonim hold that there's two different things. Loksa means where it doesn't have structural integrity anymore. It falls apart when you pick it up, for example. Pus would be a different thing. It wouldn't necessarily, it's Mogla, that was not necessarily the same thing, wouldn't necessarily make it change. Okay.
Mugla would not make it trade?
According to them, yeah, not necessarily would plus make a trade. Amri b'marav, so they said in Eretz Yisrael, it depends how far in that loxa, again, whether we're talking about pus or whether we're talking about this destruction of the structural integrity, how far in did it go? This is only if this locus, if this deterioration, that it reached. The lakusa, the deterioration, lamakim chorit, to the place of the notch. Now, kidney is shaped like this, and it has in the middle of it, in the middle of the kidney, there's a notch.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like that, and in medical use, that notch is called the hilum. That's the point where the ureters go in and out of the kidney and whatever over there. That's considered to be the essential part of the kidney.
Is it two kidneys or one kidney?
That's two. So therefore, only if this deteriorates.
One kidney?
Yeah, no, there's two kidneys. But Rochesh Bapapa had said, if you have lakusa in even one kidney, then the animal is finished. However, we're saying that they said in Eretz Yisrael, only if that lakusa reaches until the chorit, only if it reaches until this notch over here. Because that's considered the essential part of the kidney. The hechem.
By a person, he can live without one kidney.
Yeah, it's true. An animal can also live. An animal, we said, can live without either kidney.
So why should it be a tariff? It's a worthless tariff.
Again, it's not, if the kidneys are missing, then the animal is kosher. But if even one kidney has this locus, has this deterioration, then it's tariff, because eventually it's going to spread to the rest of the body. Yeah. The hechem makam charet. What do we mean by this makam charet? We mean lechivra the tusi masni. We mean the white stuff that is under the that's under the loin.
It's not pus.
Here's how the kidney is inside the animal. So you have over here is the back of the animal. Here's the flank of the animal, and you have the kidneys over here. You have the whiteness. You have the you can. Okay, you can see it, you know what, you can see it better in this picture over here. I mean, it's not inside the animal, but you can see. The point is that you have over here the tube that's going into the kidney, and you can see it's covered with fat. So that's what we mean. The Gemara describes it as Hebrew, the twisty musni, the white stuff under the loins of the animal. That's what we mean. It's fat covered, these fat covered tubes, the ureters and whatever that go in and out of the kidney.
Show me on the animal itself.
Here. So there's the side of the animal, and there's the kidneys over there. So this is tiger, the tusi mosni would be this over here. Or it would be over here. This here, to be exact. Yeah, it would be this duct over here that leads from the kidneys to the bladder. So if the lakosa reaches over there, then it's straight. Okay. Amr of Nechonia, she'otinu l'kuli trufoid ma'arava. So Nechonia says, I asked all the experts on trade, first all the ones who passed Kanshilas on trade, first, that are in Eretz Yisrael, but Amruli, and they told me, the halacha is like rochesh ba'papa, that if you have a locus in the kidney, and it reaches the notch over there, then it's treif. Again, whether locus means pus, or whether it means that it's falling apart, is Rashi versus everybody else. The less hilchas like Rav Avira. And they also said the halacha is not like Rav Avira. Even if the spleen has a hole in it, it's not a problem. However, Rav Avira nami, loyamoran elabakulshe, even Rav Avira was only, this that we're saying, the halacha is not like Rav Avira, is only if the hole in the spleen is on a thin end. Avol, the thin end, exactly like that. Avol, the sumche trefa. But if it's on the thick end, then it would be trefa. The spleen has, so here. Let's see a picture of the spleen over here. Here it is in the animal as a whole. It's shaped sort of like a tongue. So it has a thick end and it has a thin end.
The thin end
is what's hanging down over here. The thick end is what's attached inside. Here, I'll find a picture of it by itself and you'll see. Here we go. This is the spleen. Yeah. This is, again, you have a hilum that has also where the blood vessels come in. You have the thick end and you have the thin end. This is the thin end, which is further away from those, and this is the thick end. So the thick end is the more vital part. So even Rav Avira, so the halacha, so when we say the halacha is not like Rav Avira, even Rav Avira himself is saying that only if this holds at the thick end would it be traced, but not at the thin end, then it would be, then the halacha is not like him. It's kosher, but if it's at the thick end, then it's traced.
So the halacha is where
the So the halacha is, if there's a hole at the thin end, there's no problem. But if there's, if there's a hole in the thick end, in the thick half of it, then it's traced. But if you have a thickness of the tissue of the wall of the spleen less the thickness of a gold dinner shader, then it's still kosher. When it comes to the spleen, in other words, it's only trace if the hole is all the way through or almost all the way through. If you have, so Rashi gives an example. You have, let's say, if you find the needle stuck into the spleen. Then, as long as you have from the tip of the needle until the other side of the spleen is at least the thickness of a dinar zahav, then you're okay.
The thickness of dinar zahav, meaning from the surface side or from the
meaning the thickness of a coin. Think of the thickness of a coin.
No,
how thick a dinar zahav is, we're not sure. The Meiri says it's similar to a dinar zahav of his time, which in that case we have a clear idea. The Rashba says we're not sure, but since we're saying that there has to be less. That implies that it's less than half the thickness of that if you have at least half the thickness of the spleen left, then you're for sure okay.
So that's half a meaning set.
No, the spleen is not that thin.
No, but it's left, you're saying.
The Rashba is saying like this. I don't know how thick the spleen is on an animal. Let's say, for example,
Dinar Zahav. Okay.
Let me try to explain. The Rashba says we don't know exactly how thick a Dinar Zahav is. It could be 5 millimeters, it could be 10, it could be 30 millimeters. We don't know. What we do know is, since we're talking about that there's left over implies that you have less than half left. Therefore, we have to assume that a dinar zahav is definitely no thicker than half the thickness of the spleen. So we take the spleen, we measure the thickness of it. So if we find, let's say, the average spleen is, let's say, 5 inches thick, then we know, okay, a dinar zahav can't possibly be more than 2.5 inches thick. So therefore, as long as you have at least 2.5 inches left, then you know you're good. Rashi, by the way, mentions the point over here, if you have a needle in there, which we're forcing to explain, that would only be if you know that the needle actually punctured only there. You just find the needle in there, you have the usual problem we mentioned before. It might have punctured other organs as well. Okay. All right. Getting back to the kidneys, as I said in Eretz Yisrael, a rule as follows. Kola posel bereya, a general rule is that anything that would make the animal trace, if you find this condition in the lungs, shera bakulya. A kosher bakulia. That would be if a parallel thing happens with the kidneys, the animal is still kosher. Shahre, we can give an example. Nefev, posel bereya, a kosher bakulia. Because you see, for example, holes in the lung make the animal trace, but holes in the kidney, the animal is still kosher. And they continue. How much more so than if you have a condition that even if you find in the lung, which is a much more vital organ, the animal would be kosher. How much more so if you find that same condition in the kidney, that the animal will also be kosher? Okay, so the Gemara says, "Mask if lar Rav Tanchoma." So Rav Tanchoma asks on that, "Uklalahu? Are you telling me that's a general rule? I can find exceptions to that rule. First of all, barring mugla, consider the case of pus, the kosher bereya or posel bakulia, where if you find pus in or on the lungs, we said a few days ago, we said that it's kosher, whether we found an area inside the lung that had pus, you found on the outside of it, you found even large blisters over there that had pus, we said it's kosher. Or posel bakulia, on the other hand, we're saying that pus in the kolia is makes it trace. Now, according to Rashi, that works out easily because we said that lakosa means pus. According to the other Rishonim, they would have to say that there's two different things. If it doesn't have structural integrity, and also separately if it has pus in it. Anyway, okay, so there you have an example where it's the other way around. Such a thing is kosher when it comes to the lungs, but posel when it comes to the kidneys. And another example, what about, here's another case, if you find clear water, if you find, in other words, clear fluid in a blister or something on the lung, the animal is kosher, and if you find clear fluid in the kidney, it's also kosher. Now, what's the problem with that? Rashi says, I don't understand what the problem is. We only said that whatever's kosher, whatever is posel by the reya is kosher by the kulya, and you have things, and the other, and vice versa, that if you have things that are for the and things that are posel by the and things that are kosher by the reya are definitely kosher by the kulya. So what's the problem? Fine, this is something that's kosher by both of them. So it actually says I don't understand what the question is. Tosfos says the question is like this: why would you have clear fluid in there? It must be that something is deteriorating in there. It means that something is falling apart and then turning into liquid. So therefore, so we see that. So even though we're saying that pus in the kidney makes it safe, we're saying that clear fluid over there would be kosher. What's the logic? On the face of it, clear fluid would mean it's even more deteriorated. Pus at least means there are cells breaking down or whatever, but you still have enough of them left that it has a certain substance there. But if it's already turning into clear fluid. Ella Omer Ravashi. So Ravashi says no. Never mind that. No, never mind those kinds of comparisons.
No conclusion.
Well, so Ravashi says treifet kamadamis lahadavi. Are you trying to compare one kind of treifet to another? You don't necessarily say what by treifet that one thing resembles another. Because you have examples where you can cut an animal in one place and it'll be treifet, and you cut it in a similar place someplace else and it'll remain kosher. So the other day, we had this expression in the Gemara, and Rashi gave an example over there. For example, you have an animal, if you cut the tzomis agidin of it, certain tendons in the leg, then it'll become treif, but if you cut it elsewhere in the leg, even higher than that, then it won't be treif. Over here, Rashi gives a different example. If you cut, for example, the simonim, or you cut the simonim, then that kills it. That's shita. You cut the tendons in the neck. It also is dead. It's nevela. On the other hand, if you were to cut by shoulders close to there, and you're also cutting through major tendons and whatever, it still remains kosher. So therefore, you see that you can't necessarily compare one thing to another.
No, but one second. In that
the point being, in other words, just because you find something that's kosher by the lung doesn't necessarily mean that the same thing would be kosher by the kulia. They're two different organs. Okay.
Fine, but here we're talking about a line of reasoning within the kidneys between pus and liquid.
Okay.
That's two different things.
No. Sorry, one second. We said that pus in the kidney makes it straight. So fine, therefore, so clear water can also make it straight. Okay.
That's the alaka?
Wait. Okay. Umayim zakin kherim. Now, this is what we're saying. So far, we did say that clear water in the kulya is kosher. But wait, yeah, okay, fine. So because, again, ein zudom lazu. Okay, so you could say maybe this clear water comes from further deterioration. Maybe not. It could come from other things also. It could come from urine backing up or whatever. Who knows? Whatever. The point is, it's not necessarily.
In the lung, pus is not Schaefer.
And then clear water is also not. No, if you find it in a blister or whatever, yeah. So with the kidney, same thing. Yeah. Okay.
But if you find the water within the lung.
So we said, I don't know. Yeah, no, the pasture is also the same thing. Yeah, it's just small enough. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily be chasing. Okay. All right. Okay. Umayim zakim kshayrim loyam moran elabitsili. Now, this that we're saying that clear water is kosher is only if it really is completely clear. Avo achiri, but if it's cloudy, so in other words, it's not quite the consistency of pus, but it's not clear water either, then it will be treifa.
Is that
the halacha. Some rishonim and say that it refers to both the reya and the kolya. Others say it refers only to the kolya. Maybe not. We're not sure. But the context is we're talking about the kidding. The chitzili nami lo yamaran elado esiriach. Even when clear, it only works. Chitzili means clear. Lo yamaran elado esiriach. That would only apply if it doesn't smell bad. Avo esiriach. But if it smells bad, treifa, then it's going to be treifa. Okay. So those are the rules. In other words, if you find clear fluid, then it's kosher. If you find cloudy fluid, then it's treif. And if you find pus, then it's also treif. And that's in the kidney. And then you have a machlokas to what extent these rules apply to the lungs, right? Okay. Fine. Another din, hakulya
sheif. You find it in the brain.
The brain is another matter. If you find fluid around the brain, then you do have a problem because eventually it's gonna puncture the membrane. Yeah. Because eventually it's gonna puncture the membrane. So yeah, then you have a problem. Okay. Suppose you have a case where the kidneys became smaller. So in other words, we said that if an animal doesn't have kidneys, it's kosher. But here you have it had normal sized kidneys, but then it developed some disease and the kidneys shrank. So how small can they be and the animal is still kosher? The daka ad tipul, if it's a small animal, like a sheep or a goat, then if it's up to the size of a bean, then if it's down to the size of a bean, that's still kosher, smaller than that, it's safe. The gasa ad tan of a bananist, and with a large animal down to the size of an average-sized grape, and any smaller than that will be safe. Here also you have the same ad ba'ad-bechwal and ad-beloy-ad-bechwal that we discussed before. Kapul means like a
bean,
which is smaller than the greater. One thing is the Rishonim point out, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, is how do you tell the difference whether they shrank or whether to begin with they were small, whether the animal was born with naturally small kidneys. What it is the kidneys are covered with a layer of fat. So what you do is you check that layer of fat. If you find that it's smooth, then it means that the kidneys were naturally that small size. So the fat grew over them as it's supposed to, and it grew in smooth. On the other hand, if you find it's wrinkled, it means the kidneys were originally larger, and then they shrank, and that's why the fat over it wrinkled as what was underneath them became smaller. Then we're saying, too small, then the animal's shit. Okay. Then we said we have this part is in parentheses for reasons that we'll say in a second. We said in the Mishnah that if the lower jaw of an animal was removed, then the animal was still kosher. That would only apply, though, if the animal is still able to live, because you can force feed it. L'ita and hamra are two ways of force feeding an animal, one by hand, one with a keli, whatever it is. But if the jaw has been cut off and said, never mind, shoot, that you can't even force food down its throat and have it swallow it. In other words, there's a cut that's too deep. Trace, but then it'll be trained. Now, why is this in parenthesis? You have the and hamra are both two ways of force feeding an animal. The Rosh brings this statement as a true thing in halacha, but he brings it in the name of the Ga'oyim. So therefore, that implies that the Rosh, at least, did not have this in his text of the Gemara, and maybe other Rishonim didn't as well. Apparently, the Bit Yosef says, it was something that was mistakenly inserted into the Gemara by Talmidim of the Gaonim. They heard the din from their Rebbeim. They wrote it on the margin of their Gemara. Later on, it was accidentally put into the Gemara under the name of Reb Zeira. So the din may be a true din, but it's not necessarily from the original Gemara. Okay, then we said in the Mishnah Nitla Ha'im Shalah, we said if the womb of a female animal was removed, it's still kosher. So, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, you should know there's more than one name for that organ. He Ha'im, he Tarpachas, he Shalpuchas. There are three names for it that you find in different places in Shas. In fact, we have all three of them in our parish. It's called Aim in our Mishnah. It's called Tarpachas in the Gemara on Nun Vavam and Beis, in the Gemara after the next Mishnah. And it's called Shalpuchas. We had earlier in our perek that if the Shalpuchas is missing, then the animal is kosher. So you should know it has three names.
That refers to that
means the womb. It means all three of them refer to the womb.
Shalpuchas,
Aim, and Shalpuchas.
Aim and Shalpuchas.
Then we said in the
Mishnah. Common word is Aim.
Yes, I know. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, another one, Bacharusa bide Shemayim Pshena, another case where the animal will be kosher is if its lung is shrunken, or dried up, or whatever, but it happened to be gay shamayim, it happened because of natural causes.
Why are we saying
Harusa. Because our Mishnah mentioned a list of things where even though the animal has them, it's still kosher, and one of them is, if it's harusa, bidei shamayim, he said it's kosher.
It's the lung.
Yeah.
But why we use the word harusa?
Harusa means dried up.
Oh, dried up.
So if it, meaning the lung, is dried up, bidei shamayim, for example, it was scared by thunder and lightning, then it's kosher. So let's learn about that. First of all, what is the definition of charusa? No, but in other words, it's something that it can recover from. What is the definition of charusa? If its lung shrank. So then it depends. If it happened at Hashem's hands, meaning because of natural causes, then it's kosher. But if it happened at human hands, for example, Rashi says a person scared it. The Rambam gives an example. Let's say a person took another animal and shechted it in front of this one. So the other animal was scared from the afternoon. So then it'll be treifa because then it won't recover from that. Okay. Rav Shimon ben Elazar, I'm going to ask b'day kol abriyah. Rav Shimon ben Elazar says, also, if it was caused by any other creature, other than people, that is. So what is he referring to? Rav Shimon ben Elazar, a reisha koi, ulakula. Is Rav Shimon ben Elazar referring to the reisha that the Tanakhama had said if it was dried up, shrunken, whatever, bidei shamayim is kosher. And Rav Shimon Elazar says not only bidei shamayim, but also by another animal, let's say by a lion. So then he'd be mekel. Oi, a sefer koyo l'chumra. Or is he referring to the sefer and being machmer? That the Tanakhama says if it was caused by a human being, then it's chase. And Rav Shimon Elazar would say also if it's caused by another animal. So which is it? Toshma, the Tanya. Charusta bidei adam chayfa, that if it was shrunken because of a person, then it's chayf. Rav Shimon Elazar, I'm afi de kolabrius. Rav Shimon Elazar says also if it was scared by any other creature. So therefore, we see clearly that from that last brisa that he's referring that he's being machmir. He's saying not only if it was caused by a human being, but also if it was caused by an animal, like for example, a lion roaring that frightened him. Okay. So here's a case. Rabba Baba Chana have a also b'mambara. Rabba Baba Chana was one time traveling in the desert. You know, we have the stories in Baba Basra over there. It was Rabba Baba Chana seeing the Mesa Midbar in the desert, seeing Gloria Kurdach. Maybe this was the same story. Maybe it was the same time he was traveling in the desert. Anyway. Ashkaf Hanhu Dichri, he found some rams that stomach Rea Jidhu, and where he shafted them to get some food, and he found their lungs were shrunken. Are they kosher or not? Also, Shaul Ben Medrash. So he came to ask him in this Medrash, how do we know whether this happened Bidei Shamayim or Bidei Adam? So I told him like this. Omrulay, they told him, here's how you tell. Bit kaita, if this takes place during the summer, so you want to keep them cool. I see the shikli chivri, therefore take white basins. Rashi gives two explanations. One is that it means, we mean basins made out of earthenware, but white, meaning they're made out of white clay. The point is, white ones will help keep it cooler. White things don't absorb sunlight as much, so therefore they help keep things cooler. Rashi's second explanation is that white just means, generally speaking, made out of earthenware, as opposed to the other one later on when it says black ones, which according to that would mean metal ones. Anyway, whatever it is, you take basins that are going to help keep it cool. Umalinu maya kruvi, fill up the basin with cold water. And put these shrunken lungs inside the basin in the water for 24 hours. If they recover, in other words, if they recover their normal size, good. Then bidei shemayim heal kshayla. Then you know that the original thing that scared them and caused their lungs to shrink was bidei shemayim. Therefore, they're kosher because this, the fact that they were able to regain their shape after 24 hours in cold water shows that in life also, if the animal had continued to live, if you hadn't shafted it, they would have eventually recovered their normal size also. But yiloi treifa, and if not, then it's treif because it means they wouldn't have recovered. Then it means it was bidei adam, or as Rav Shimon Elazar says, bidei kolabrius. That's during the summer. This sitra, if you have to check this during the winter, then the other way around, you want to keep it warmer than the surrounding air temperature. I see mishikli shichumi, so then you have to take dark basins, which again, two explanations in Rashi. One is it means made out of dark earthenware as opposed to white, made out of dark clay as opposed to white clay in the previous case. The other one is that dark means that they're made out of copper as opposed to the other ones who are made out of earthenware, because copper absorbs heat. Or because dark earthenware absorbs heat. Shachol means brown or black or whatever. Umalinu maya pshuri, fill them with lukewarm water. Va'anchinu meslas, and again, put the lungs in there for 24 hours. Ihadra ba'ya pshera, if it recovers its normal shape, it's kosher. Ve'iloi tshrefa, and if not, then it's shape. So that's how you check it. As in many other cases of shapeless, the Ramah says we don't have the expertise to do that kind of checking. So you find an animal that's charusa, then it's trace, unless you have some of the poskim say that maybe if you know for a fact that this animal was scared, bidei shamayim, for example, you there was a thunder and lightning storm, and shortly afterwards you shechted it and found the lung shrunken, maybe then you can be makel. All right. Then we said in the Mishnah had glue.
I mean, the lungs are shrunk.
Yeah, that's what we're saying. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah another case had gluda. We said if an animal had its skin stripped off, then we said that we had a machloikas, Rav Meir said it's treif, the Chacham said it's kosher. Turn around, or the other way around, actually. We said in the Mishnah, Rav Meir makshir, the Chacham and poistim, you say. So, let's talk about that. I said the Chacham said it's kosher. Okay. Turn up on him, we learn in a braisa, had gluda, if an animal has its skin stripped off, which, by the way, as we said in the Mishnah, Rashi had mentioned, it could either be because of a disease that caused its skin to fall off, or it could be because of overwork that the skin rubbed away or whatever. Anyway, whatever it is, Reb Meir Machshir.
Sure,
hold on. Reb Meir Machshir v'chum poison. Reb Meir says the animal is still kosher. Reb Chum says poison too. Ukvar heid el ozer safra v'yirchan. And then Gudgada, we have an edus that el ozer the sofer and Yochanan ben Gudgada came and gave edus in front of Beis Din ala gluda shepsula about a case of a gluda of an animal that had its skin taken off, that it is possible that it's changed. So, Amar Rav Shimon Elazar chaz about Rav Meir. So Rav Shimon Elazar says, Rav Meir apparently changed his mind and held and agreed that it's changed. So the question is, the cloud of the Rav Shimon Elazar polig Rav Meir b'gluda. So are you, the pastors, I guess, because Elazar Safra and Yechonim and Gurgida are Talmidim of Rav Meir. The question is, that what do we mean? Rav Shimon Elazar is saying that Rav Meir changed his mind. The clouds of the Rav Shimon Elazar polig Rav Meir b'gluda. Are you telling me Rav Shimon Elazar holds that Rav Meir even originally disagreed and said that it's kosher? Which one? That's what our Mishnah says. But we learn in a Braisa of Altanya. Am Rav Shimon Elazar, lo nechlaku Rav Meir v'chachamim ala gluda shepsula. Both Rav Meir and the Chachamim did not disagree on this. They both agreed that an animal that had its skin removed is possible. In fact, we have Eidos that Rav Oshia, the son of Rav Yehuda the Basam, which is the spice seller, gave Eidos in front of Rav Akiva in the name of Rav Tarfin, ala gluda shepsula, about an animal that had skin stripped off, that's possible. The imnishtayab,
he gave
Eidos. In other words, he said that you should know, I'm informing you that I learned from Rav Tarfin that such a thing is possible, that such a thing is true. However, that if there's a stella size left of it, then it's kosher, which we're going to talk about in a second, what we mean and where that has to be. Anyway, the point is, Rav Shimon Elazar is saying Rav Meir and the Chachamim did not disagree on it. So what are you telling me in the first braita that Rav Shimon Elazar is saying Rav Meir changed his mind, implying that they originally argued?
Well, that could have been after
it. Amar Rav Nachman, you're right. What does Rav Shimon Elazar mean when he says they didn't argue? He means by Amar Rav Meir, Machlokus, that means Rav Meir did not continue his Machlokus because eventually he changed his mind and agreed with the Chachamim. Which was afterwards, yeah. So our Mishnah records the first stage of it, that Rav Meir had disagreed. Later on. Okay. So we said in the Braise, Nishtaiba to sell a Kshedah, if there's at least a Kshedah size of it, then it's kosher. Hecha, where on the body does that have to be in order for it to be kosher? Amrav, Yehuda, Amr Shmuel, Apnei Ashed Rekola. It has to be along the full length of the spine.
And then it's kosher?
Then it's kosher. Because eventually then the rest of the skin will grow back. Ibarlus, and now we have a question. So what do we mean? When we say the size of a sella along the length of the spine, do we mean the orich the cotton? Do we mean it's long and skinny? The chemisarif lohavik a sella, the total area of intact skin is the size of a sella. The total area is the size of that's what we're saying. In other words, if you have some of the skin left, then we're saying it's kosher. So the question is, do we mean when we say that there has to be casella, do we mean that
residual?
Do we mean
casella?
Yeah. Okay. So does it mean that you have a long skinny strip where altogether, if you were to take that entire strip of skin and roll it up, you would have the size of a sella? Does it mean that? Or maybe it means you have to have the width of a sella along the full length of the shedra, which of course means a much larger area. Toshma, the parish of Nehiroi, Mishmei de Shmuel. We can prove this because Rav Nehiroi explained in the name of Shmuel. It means Keroichav Kesella Pnei Ashedra Kula. It means you have to have the width of a full sella along the whole length of the shedra. So not that you have the total area of intact skin equals the size of a sella, but the whole strip of skin has to be the width of a sella, and it has to run the length of the spine.
To be kosher?
For it to be kosher. Yeah.
And if it's less than that, it's kosher.
Then it would be tricked.
Less than that?
Yeah. So. Most of the skin has been removed. That's the part that's left we're talking about. The part that's left is that amount. Okay. Rav Abachana Amar Rosh Prakim. Rav Abachana says the sella has to be on Rosh Prakim. It has to be on all the joints of the animal. Rashi says, for example, at the joints of the legs and the thighs and whatever, you need a casella. You need a casella in those places. It has to be in the place of its navel is where you need a cella. Yeah, the machlokas are showing him, is it that we're saying that any one of these by itself would be enough, or do you need all of them, or, yeah. Okay. So the actual halacha, so you have a machlokas rishonim on that point. The actual halacha is because of the usual suffix is we don't really know, and therefore you'd have to have it would be have to be intact in all those places. It would have to be intact in all those places. Okay. Boy, Rabbi Yana b'Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Yana b'Rabbi Shmuel asked the question. What about the other way around? Nito mokem hashed rov kolay kayim. What would happen if the other way around? Most of the skin is intact, but you have a strip along the spine that was removed. So exactly the opposite. Before the skin along the spine was left and the rest was missing.
Absolutely.
Now it's the other way around. The rest of the skin is intact. You have a strip along the spine that's missing. Or what about nitro mokum tibure v'kolakayim? What about if you have skin on the area of the navel was removed and the rest of it is still there? Or nitro rosh prasim v'kolakayim? What if you have it was removed in all the by all the joints but the rest of it is still intact? And the answer is teiku. Now usually we would say that teiku were machne. In this case, you have some of the posts, some of the Rishonim are Machmir on it also. You have many of the Rishonim actually are Mekel on it. And one reason, the Rambam is one of them is Mekel, which has definition. It gives a logical reason for it. First of all, the Rambam in general, we said before, the Rambam says you're Mekel on Sofet Shreifus in many cases when it's not Jerusa. But besides which, the test definition says another reason. Here's a Sheth Seker. We anyway have a Sofet. Which one of those is the essential one for the body? You have three different ones. So here you have a Sheth Seker, whether if only those are missing, and then the rest of it is intact. And second of all, whether even any one of those is the essential place, so therefore you can be makel.
This would not be accepted as a korban, right?
I don't know if it would be. Not necessarily. No, I don't know. I don't know if it would be a mumah necessarily. Right. Fine. Okay. Getting back to, okay. Further on this topic of the skin being removed, Omer Rav, kol ha'er kulei maso begloda, whenever you have an animal that has skin stripped off, then anywhere you have skin, then it still helps. It still makes it kosher, which means, by the way, that Rav may disagree with the previous things before we were mentioning any specific places. Rav may be saying, as long as you have intact skin somewhere on the body, that's kosher. Chutz me erv beis ha-parsis, except for the area of skin near the hooves. Now you actually have two explanations of what the skin near the hooves is. We're going to learn later on in Arma Sechta. We're going to talk about that in a different context. One possibility is it means the skin actually literally right above the hooves. The other possibility, the Gemara says there, it means the lower parts of the leg. The lower part of the leg, the lower joint of the leg is called in halacha. This joint over here is which is pretty much the equivalent of the sole of a human foot.
Right.
Is called in halacha akuba hanim keres imarosh. It's called the part of the leg which is usually sold with the head, because that's how they would do in those days when they shechted an animal and cut it up. They would usually take this piece, because it's a smallish piece. There's not much meat on it, and they would sell it together with the head, which also doesn't have much meat. But that way, at least the person gets a decent amount of meat out of it. So that part is called akuba hanim keres imarosh. And the Gemara brings an opinion later on in the Masechta. Again, according to Rav himself. You have later on in Arma Sechta, so you have one opinion later on in Arma Sechta, and then in Perek Ha'Ur HaRotev is that Beis HaParsis means only the skin directly above the hooves. In other words, just this area over here,
like this one here.
Yeah, like this area over here.
Right.
And then you have another opinion that it means a little further up. It means the skin of the Arkoban and Perek Ha'Urish. Yeah, well, from the ankle and downward. So we'll learn about that in more detail later on in the Masechta. But anyway, okay. So the point is, the Rav is saying that everything it helps as far as that eventually it'll recover, except for the herb beta parasis, because it's soft. It's,
nice.
That skin over there is so soft, it's almost like flesh. So therefore, it's not going to really help that the rest of the skin is going to regenerate. Rabbi Yechanan says no. Even if all you have left is the skin around the base of parasis, then you're also good. So now Rabbi Asi asks Rabbi Yechanan in this connection, in this case, if you only have the skin left around the hooves, would it help above the hooves or whatever? Would it help to save the animal from being strafed when the rest of the skin was stripped off? And Rabbi Yechanan says, yes, it would save it. Like we just said, Rabbi Yechanan says, even Urbeis HaParsis. So Rabbi Asi says, how could that be? Limatonu Rabbeinu, you Rebbe yourself taught us the Mishnah later on in Arma Sechta, the Elu Sha'ur Esein Kivsaron, In the following cases, the skin is considered like the flesh. As far as Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, we have, now we know, we've learned before the concept that if you touch the nevela of a, if you touch a kezayit or you carry a kezayit of the nevela of a dead animal, then the person becomes tamei. If you touch it or if you carry it. Carrying can mean even without touching it, like you carry it in a box or something. A kezayit, then you become tamei. What happens? What's counted towards that kezayit? Does skin count to it? Normally, no, because usually the skin is hard. You can't eat it. But you have certain areas on the body where the skin is soft, and therefore it's more like the flesh, and therefore it counts towards the kezayit. And the Mishnah mentions over there, among those is ur beis haparsis, is the skin above the hooves. So if we see that that skin is so soft that it's considered like flesh, how could it help as far as a gluda that eventually the skin will regenerate if it's different than regular skin? Amalei, said Rav Yechanan, answers him, al takniteini, don't provoke me, in other words, don't try to challenge me on that. Shavaloshin yachid ani shoyna osa. You should know, I learned that Mishnah later on in our Masechta. I learned the my text of that Mishnah has that it's only loshin yachid, that it's only according to one opinion, Rav Shimon. In other words, the way we have the Mishnah printed in front of us is the Elu Sharisen Kisaron. It's a Stam Mishnah, and it starts listing a bunch of cases. Rav Yechanan's version of that Mishnah, the way he learned that Mishnah, was that this is all according to Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon Omer Elu Sharisen Kisaron or whatever. So therefore, it's only a Das Yachid. So therefore, it's not halacha. Right. And in fact, Rav Yechanan says, I'll prove that that's only the opinion of Rav Shimon. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braita, in connection with the dinim of pigul, hashoshet es ha'ola, if a person, we know that the basic concept of pigul is a person does one of the four avodas of a korban, shchita, kabbalah, halacha, and zirka, having in mind that he's going to eat the parts that are supposed to be eaten, or burn the parts that are supposed to be burned, the next day, chutzuzmane, right? So, hashoshet es ha'ola, if somebody shechs an ola, lahachtir kezayis me'oshet chaltachat ha'al yachutlam kaimai, if he has in mind that he's going to burn a kezayis from the skin that's under the tail, which is also one of those soft skins mentioned in our Ovar Reuter, that's considered like a flesh, if he has in mind that he's going to be makriv a kezayis of that skin, chutlam kaimai, outside the Bismikdash, possible, and the korban is possible, the ain't by chorus, but there's no chorus, because there's no chorus for chutlam kaimai. On the other hand, if he has in mind that he's going to burn it, chutzuzmanay, the next day inside the Beis Mikdash, pigul v'chayov and olav koris. Then it would be pigul and it would be chayav koris for it. Because now the point is, in other words, by an olav it's not relevant to talk about whether he has in mind to eat it, because an olav is completely burnt on the mizbeach. But the skin of the olav is not burnt on the mizbeach, only the flesh is, only the flesh and the bones and whatever. This ursha, tachas ha'alya, is considered like flesh, because it's soft. And therefore it wouldn't be included in the rules of pigul. On the other hand, it would, that's what we're saying.
Because it's soft?
Because it's soft, and therefore it's edible. And therefore it's right. So,
since it's edible,
then it's considered like flesh, right?
There's no muscle in that.
Doesn't matter. The point is, it is muscle, but that's not. It's the skin under the tail of the animal. So therefore, it's soft. Okay. Of the underside of the tail, whatever, yeah. Eliezer ben Yehuda ish Ivlim, Omer Mishum Rav Yaakov, then where Eliezer ish ben Yehuda from Ivlim says the name of Rav Yaakov, v'chein hoy Rav Shimon ish ikus Omer Mishum Rav Shimon, and Rav Shimon Yehuda from Ikus says the same thing, Chau Ikus, whatever, says in the name of Rav Shimon. Not just that, but the rule is like this. Echad ur beis haparsis, whether we're talking about the skin above the hooves, the echad ur ha'rosh she'egal arach, also the skin of the head of a young calf, which is also soft, the echad ur shall tachas ha'alya, also the skin on the underside of the tail. The chol shemonu chachamim gabitume elu sharisein kibsaran. And everything that we have listed in that Mishnah of Ha'orva Roitev, where the chachamim say that the following things, the skin of these parts has the same din as the meat, because it's soft. And the Gemara interjects, what is that adding? What do you mean, v'chol shemona chachamim? It means v'chobi ur beis haboshes. He wants to include by that also the case that it mentions over there in the Mishnah. It mentions also the skin. Oh, it means also the skin around the beis haboshes, around the amount of private parts of a female animal. And the reason Rashi says, we don't mention explicitly over here because we're talking about an ola over here. An ola is a male animal. But nevertheless, the fact is this Obey Taboshes is also one of these soft skins that's considered like a meat. The usual rule would be chutzim kaimah. If he has in mind that he's going to eat it, burn it, chutzim kaimah, possible in the karis, chutzim manet tigul v'chayom nala karis. So we see from that it's Reb Shimon who's saying this whole list that these things are considered like flesh. The Chachamim wouldn't necessarily agree with that. So therefore, by the same logic over here, this skin near the base of pyrosis is too soft. Even if it's left, it's not going to allow the rest of the skin to regenerate. Rabbi Yechanan is saying Obey Taboshes is matzil. Rabbi Yechanan is saying this that the Mishnah is saying over there that it's too soft, that would only be a coincidence of Shimon. The Chachamim would disagree with that. The Chachamim would say skin is skin. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yechanan, if you have that little bit of skin left above the hooves, or maybe the whole bottom joint, whatever, then that's enough that eventually the rest of the skin on the animal will regenerate. Again, the halacha is not really like that anyway, because the halacha is, we had three different opinions before, that you have to have along the spine and on the joints and whatever. Yeah. Now we've talked about, the first two Mishnayos of our Perek have talked about Trefus. Most of the Trefus we've been talking about apply equally to animals and to birds. But now we have to talk about things that are specific to birds. You have, first of all, birds have, to a certain extent, different internal organs than land animals. Second of all, you have some details that are going to be different between one and the other for various reasons, as we're going to discuss. Yeah. So therefore, of the elu treifas loy, the following cases are treif when it comes to a bird. First of all, nekuvas havesh v'sukas agageres. If there's a hole in the esophagus or if the windpipe is cut. Now those are the same as an animal. Rashi says the reason why we're adding them, the reason why we're repeating them over here is, now look, you would think like this: a bird is easier to kill than an animal. We see that from the fact that a bird you can check only one thing. So maybe, therefore, if the gargaris has even a smaller hole, even less than half the circumference, then it should be, or less than an iser, it should be today. Note, the same rules apply to animals as to birds.
What's the kana?
The kana is the windpipe.
And what's the gargaris?
The kana and gargaris are two names of the same thing.
Okay.
Technically, the kana means only the pipe itself, and gargaris means when it has, and gargaris means with all the rings of cartilage around it, but there was sometimes used in
the without the rings of cartilage.
Because you could cut off the rings of cartilage and see, just the two by itself. You can. That's possible to not while the animal's alive. We're talking after a stress.
Okay.
Another case, hiksa chulda al rosha. If a weasel or whatever kind of creature a chulda is, exactly a rat or whatever, struck it on its head, makam sha'oso is a trefa, in a place where it would make it trefa. Now, struck it. Well, no, it means, right. It means on the top part of it. Right. It means basically the part where the brain is inside of it. The point is, Rashi says hiksa does not, first of all, hiksa does not mean that it hit it with its paw. If it hit it with its paw, you have drusa anyway. We're not talking about that. We're talking about is there's
a claws.
That's what we're saying. So in other words, hiksa doesn't mean it hit it with its claws. It means that it bit it with its teeth, Rashi says, as we're going to see in the Gemara. So if it bit it with its teeth, the problem is that even though you only see a hole in the skull, it might have punctured the membranes around the brain also. So therefore, we have a problem. Another case, nikav akurkavan, another case where a bird would be traced is if the kurkavan has a hole in it. So the kurkavan is, in English, it's called the gizzard. A bird's digestive system works a lot different than a human being's or a mammal's, because, among other things, because birds don't have teeth. So therefore, the birds don't have teeth. So the gizzard has to do most of the job of grinding up the food that with human beings and with animals would eat. Okay. The gizzard is the stomach of the bird. It's the equivalent of the stomach of an animal or a person, the difference being that with a bird, it swallows its food more or less whole because it doesn't have teeth. So therefore, the gizzard does the main job of grinding up the food.
How is it called in English?
In English, it's called the gizzard.
In
Hebrew, it's called the kurkavan. So here's some closer-up pictures of it. So So you have the food comes in through the esophagus. It gets stored temporarily in the crop, which is called the zethic. We're going to deal with that later. Mm-hmm. Eventually, it goes down. You know, you have a part over here, which is not mentioned in halacha. It's called the proventriculus, which is basically there are digestive juices over there. But the halacha doesn't consider it. It's just considered part of the. It's just considered part of the esophagus still. Then it goes into the gizzard over there, into the stomach, and it's ground up. It gets ground up in there. So we have to mention then that if the curcuma has a hole in it, because the curcuma is different than the other stomachs, it's different than the stomachs of an animal. But the same thing, if it has a hole in it, then it's safe. Yeah. We learned earlier in the Masechta, though, that it would have to have, the holes would have to be through both layers and in the same place. Because we said the two layers are tightly attached to each other, the muscles and the grinding part on the inside, they don't move relative to the other. So unless you have a hole straight through, then it's not going to be safe. Nikwa dakin. Another case would be if the intestines are punctured. Another case would be now there's no particular chiddush actually says in the intestines being punctured. The same thing applies to an animal as well. The chiddush is because in the next Mishnah we're going to talk about cases where if the intestines came out of the stomach, like came sticking out through the rear of the bird, which you don't usually have that with animals. It's more likely to happen with birds in the course of laying eggs or whatever. Yeah. Anyways. So, and another case, if the bird fell into a fire and its inner organs became nechmeru, which nechmeru means, Rashi explains, means they shrank. They shrank and they changed color because of the fire.
What's the previous lesson we had for shrank?
We had charusa, but charusa didn't mean so much shrank, it meant like shrank and dried up. Here they didn't necessarily dry up, but here what it is they shrank and changed color because of the fire. So im yirukim psulim, so if these internal organs, which normally should be red, have turned green from the fire, then they're psulim, then the animal's trait. Im abdumim, if they remain red, kshedim, then the bird is still kosher. By the way, you have a machlokas rishonim, whether this particular trefa applies to animals or not. You have rishonim, for example, a rosh, who says it doesn't apply to animals, because animals have much thicker muscles and bones and whatever. If it fell into the fire, by the time it would affect the internal organs, the animal would be dead from being burned anyway. So you have other rishonim who learn that, no, it would apply to animals as well. Usually it's more common for birds to fall into fire, and because they have thinner muscles and bones and whatever, it's easier for the internal organs to get damaged without the bird dying as a whole. But nevertheless, the same thing would apply to an animal as well. You have rishonim who learn that way. Okay. Another case, dorsa of a turf of a coat. So what happens if you stepped on a bird, or if you knocked it against a wall, or if it's past the behema, or an animal crushed it by stepping on it? What do you mean? Dursa vitur for bakoso. Dursa, not drisa as an animal attacking it. Dursa, if a person stepped on it. Osha turfa bakoso, or he banged it against the wall. Osha tasta behema, or an animal crushed it by stepping on it. Now, in all those cases, you have the same problem that we talked about the other day with an animal that falls off a roof. You have the problem of risuke varim. You may have internal organs have gotten crushed, or not ripped out necessarily, but crushed or disfigured or whatever. Yeah, ripped out. Suppose the bird is still moving convulsively, but it hasn't actually gotten up and walked. So if it got up and walked, we said there's no problem. Im v'shasa, mass less, v'shasa, as if you kept it 24 hours and then you shechted it, shader, then it's kosher, although it means you'll still need to do bedikah, as we learned earlier. If it's alive for 24 hours, you don't have, you still have to do bedikah. Right. In other words, what we said is, again, it has to either get up, stand up. If it stand up, then you need bedikah. If it doesn't stand up but it survives for 24 hours, also you need bedikah. If it gets up and walks normally, then you don't even need bedikah. The point is, again, Rashi says, you would think, since a bird is easier to kill than an animal, maybe even if it survives 24 hours, maybe you would think that's not enough. No, we're saying that's enough. Okay. I don't want to have bedikah. Okay. So let's talk about the first case where we said, not the first case, the first two cases about the windpipe and the esophagus. Those are fairly obvious. We dealt with those already earlier in the past. Let's talk about the third case. And we said if a weasel bit the bird on the head, then we said that in a place, in a part of the head where it would make a trefa, then we had a problem. So Rav and Shmuel and Levi Damri, so Rav and Shmuel and Levi all say, there's a way to check whether it actually punctured the membranes. Like this, machnis yodei lefnim ubodim. What you do is like this: you stick your hand or your finger or whatever into the mouth of the bird. And you stick your finger in to the mouth of the bird.
That's a knock on the head.
Okay, so what you do is like this. Here's the inside. Here's a diagram over here. You reach into the mouth of the bird with the finger. You press upward on the roof of the mouth.
Yeah, the palate.
Yeah, in the vast object, and then you check it. How do you check it? You press upward in the vast spoiler. If you see brain tissue coming out of a hole in the skull. Then you know it's chaser, because then you know the membranes of the brain were punctured as well. But you love chaser, and if not, then it's kosher, because it means they weren't punctured.
It doesn't disprove that it was punctured.
If
it disproves that it doesn't leak out.
No. The point is, if there was a hole there, if the weasel had caused a hole that goes all the way through the skull and the membranes, then you press up against the palate, and then brain tissue is going to leak out of it. The Rif, by the way, mentions, because he has a slightly different gear set in the Gemara over here, another way that you could do it. He says also another way you could do it is you press on the skull, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. You press on the
outside.
The opposite. You press on the outside of the skull near the hole and see again if the pressure causes brain tissue to come out through the hole next day. Okay. So the question is, Hanicha Lamanda. Now, we learned earlier in the Masechta, in the Perek, when we talked about the case with an animal, we said if the membrane, the Mishnah had said if the membrane, singular, of the brain is punctured, and we discussed there which one. The brain has two membranes. So we discussed it. We had a machlokes, whether it means only if the inner one is punctured, it's today, or also only if the, yeah. So Hanicha Lamanda Ma'ad. So we had two different opinions. In Shulchan Aruch, it brings that in principle, it's trace only if the inner membrane is punctured. However, you have poskim who learn that it's trace even if only the outer one is punctured. And therefore, we should be choshish for that, unless behefsin merubah, then you can be meiko. And you have the shach and the taz say maybe not even behefsin merubah. Anyway, okay. So, hanichal mandom ad demintiv kama tatal. Okay. We can understand this way of checking would work out well according to the opinion. Krum, yeah, kama is the Aramaic word for it. If you say, according to the opinion over there, that the animal, or in this case the bird, is traced only if both membranes have been punctured, in particular only the lower membrane, then good. If you do this test, pressing up from the palate or pressing down on the outside of the brain, if both the brain tissue is only going to come out, if you were talking about it was bit by a weasel, you're not going to have, if the weasel made a hole in the skull, it's not going to make a hole in the skull, not in the outer membrane, but in the inner membrane. That's not going to happen. If you have a hole in the inner membrane as a result of the bite, it's also going to be in the outer membrane.
Yeah.
So if you say that the animal is traced only if the bottom one is punctured, which in this particular case means the top one has been punctured as well, then fine, then this test is valid. You press up on the palate or you press down on the skull, see if any brain tissue comes out. If it doesn't, it means in particular the inner one has been punctured. The outer one obviously was punctured as well, because if the inner one is punctured, it must mean the weasel bit away.
If the internal one is punctured and not the outer one, you can press on it and it won't come out.
That's true, but you're not going to have, if the weasel bit it, and made a hole in the skull, you're not going to have that the inner membrane got punctured without the outer one. How does the outer membrane stay whole? El Lamanda Oma Inka Vila Afagabla Inka Tata. But according to the opinion that we said over there, that the animal is traced, even if only the upper membrane, the outer membrane is traced, even if the inner one is still whole. In that case, how does the test work? Nechosh Dilma Ila Inkiv Tatala Inkiv. Maybe in this case, the weasel bit through the skull and the outer membrane, not the inner membrane.
The inner membrane is a weasel.
Hold on. E Issa de Inkiv Ila Tatala Inkiv. So, one second. Nechosh, shouldn't we have to be concerned? Dilma Ila Inkiv Tatala Inkiv. Maybe the outer membrane was punctured, but the inner one is not. So you won't have anything leaking out, but nevertheless, it'll be traced, according to that opinion. The answer is no, as you said, he is said the inkivi law, because in this case, if the outer membrane was punctured, tata, as law means the higher one, so meaning the outer one, tata, then the lower one, the inner one, agav ruche, exactly, because it's very soft, nifka paka, if you put pressure, it will burst open. So if you see brain tissue leaking out, maybe it means only the outer one was punctured by the weasel, fine, but that's enough, according to that opinion, to make it today. Yeah. And according to the other opinion, we would say you press it gently so that you'll make sure that it doesn't. Okay. Fine. All right. Omer Ze'iri. Now, Ze'iri says in this connection, actually, ein bedika l'choda. There's no way of checking. If a bird was bit by a weasel, there's no way of checking whether using one of these tests to see whether any brains leak out. Mipnei Shinao Dakos, because its teeth are very thin.
We said that it has to be a bigger size, no?
We said, no. It doesn't matter. We said that as far as birds. As far as predatory birds, we said that there's a different, certain kinds of predatory birds that have to be larger, that were at least the same size as the victim.
Right.
And No, but a chulda is different. We didn't say that. It doesn't matter. A chulda is not a bird. A chulda is a weasel.
A weasel,
rat, whatever. It's different. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Land animals are different. Okay. It's because its teeth are small.
Yeah.
So the question of chishinei dakos my hobby. So what if its teeth are small? It can still make holes. You can still check them. Say, no. The point is, it's still going to make holes. You can still do the same kind of test and see if anything comes out through the hole. Right, but the point is not just that its teeth are thin. The problem is that its teeth are thin and crooked.
At the end, it's crooked.
Whatever. So therefore, the point is, in other words, that... not that it won't penetrate. Pay attention. Of course it can penetrate. The Mishnah said that it can make it straight. The point is, in other words, not necessarily is the same point where you have the hole in the outside of the skull, not necessarily is that going to correspond to the place where you have holes in the membrane. So you push up over here, nothing's going to leak out over here because it's on an angle.
It's not a valid test
to do that when it comes to if it was bit by a holder.
Because the tooth goes on an angle,
it's rounded, and therefore it goes in on an angle, and therefore you're not necessarily going to have the part of the skull, which is still intact, which wasn't bit through, is going to protect any brain matter from leaking out through the membranes that may have been punctured.
Okay. In other words, the hole would be at different places.
Right. So, key solic linhardar, key solic linhardar, then later on when he, the Iri, went up from Babel, moved from Babel to Naharga, Shalach Lahu, he sent to the Chachamim in Babel, and Naharga itself is in the country of Babel, but here Babel means the city of Babel. So he moved from the city of Babel to Naharga, which is also in the country of Babel. Shalach Lahu, he sent them a message as follows. Take it back. Dvarim Shalmati Lefneichem Toh Sein B'yadi. What I said before to you was a mistake. Bram, rather, Kach Omer Meshmeder of Shimon Lakish. This is what they said in the name of Rish Lakish.
Bram
means, however, so many times it means indeed. Indeed, this is what they said in the name of Rav Shimon Lakish. Boikin l'chol de b'yad. You can do a test for the when there was a bite of a weasel using the hand, using the finger, like we said before. Avol loy b'masner. But the point is, you can't do the test using a nail. Not a nail as in a fingernail, but a nail as in the kind that you use for building. How would you use a nail for testing? What you would do is like this. You would shech the bird. You would open up the skull, and then you would take a nail and run it along the membrane. If the membrane is smooth and there's no holes in it, then fine. If there's a hole someplace in it, then the end of the nail will catch on it.
You
open up the skull, you take off the top of the skull, you take a nail and you rub the you run the point of it along the membrane and see if it catches and you feel if it catches.
Like a knife,
yeah, if it catches, then yeah. Okay. But Rish Lakish is saying you shouldn't do with that. And the reason for that is because you could also have, by mistake, you might do it a little too hard and then you can create a new puncture when there wasn't there before and you're causing Jewish money to get lost. So that was the point that Yudhi says. It's not that you can't. That's what Rish Lakish is saying. You can check by hand. You should not check using a nail. But Rav Yechanan Omer Asa Masmer. Rav Yechanan says no. You could even use a nail. And the Gemara says Utfugta de Rav Yehuda v'Rav Nechemya. In fact, we have the same or similar machlokes between Rav Yehuda and Rav Nechemya. Chad bodik v'yoda v'chad bodik v'machta. One would check with his hand, the other one would check with a needle, in a similar way to the nail. Manda bodik v'yada, the one of them who checked with, we don't know yet which one is which. We're going to see soon if we can figure out which one is which. The one who would check with his hand by pressing up or pressing down, as the case may be, Amalela manda bodik v'machta. He criticized and he said to the one who used the nail to check, he says, how could you do that? Admoste asim chalam amonin shor yisrael. What are you continuing? You're causing Jews to lose money over here. You might accidentally make a new puncture over there, then you're going to declare it trace. Amalei. And the other one answer is Amalei man de bodik for machzel, man de bodik viyada. On the other hand, the one who's using a needle says to the one who's using a hand, ad masa at the machzel is your nevelus. So how long are you going to be feeding Jewish people nevelus? You're causing your test with a hand is not necessarily sensitive enough. You might be missing cases where there's a hole over there, and you're causing that people are eating nevelus. What do you mean nevelus? What do you mean nevelus? Well, shchute. At least it was shechted. You can't call it nevelus. You write elatrace. He means not nevelus. He means trace. And what's the problem? Sheminik of krum shamayach. Because after all, maybe there's a hole in the membrane, and you with your finger test is not catching that. Okay, so is it exactly the same machloekus between the shlokish and Rabbi Yochanan, or is it a similar machloekus? That you have Rishonim discuss. Maybe there's maybe a needle and a nail are two slightly different things. Maybe okay. There's also when we said Rish Lakish says that you check with a hand, not a nail, does it mean necessarily you shouldn't use with nail, or does it mean you don't have to use a nail, but you could if you want? And Rabbi Yochanan is saying you could also use a nail. Maybe then the Tanoim are actually saying you must use one versus the other. Okay.
Which one we don't.
That's the Machlokas are showing him to have an understanding of. Okay. Which one? It's different. I don't remember which Rishonim say what. Okay. Which of these Tanoim said which? We had Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya. Which is the one who would use a finger test? Which is the one who would use a needle test? Kistayim, Rabbi Yehuda, who would bodik v'yada. We can conclude that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who would check using his hands with his fingers. The Tanya, because we learn in a Braisa of Shim and Allah Zayim and Mishum of Yehuda, both in the hold of a yad abalay b'masmer. You can check for a weasel's bite using the hand, using the fingers, but not using a nail. And he continues, Nishbar ha'etzem, and the bird is trait, if the skull is broken, apophishal and nikab krum shomayach, even if the membranes around the brain are not punctured. Now that seems to contradict that we just said before. I'm going to ask about that in a second. But first, the point is, Kistayim, okay, so that proves it. Rabbi Yehuda is the one who says that you can use a finger, so he is the one who would check with his finger, whereas Rabbi Nechemya would use a needle, and Rabbi Yehuda says to Rabbi Nechemya, you shouldn't be using a needle, you're causing Jewish money to be wasted, and Rabbi Nechemya is telling Rabbi Yehuda, yeah, but you might miss some cases. Okay. Now, Hogufa Kasha, now we seem to have a contradiction in this bride. Amrit Boitkin Machol de Yad Abel Ebermas. You say you check for a weasel's bite, using the hand, using the finger, but by pressing and seeing if brain tissue leaks out, but not using a needle, not using a nail, is slavidikusa, meaning in other words that there is a valid test. You test to see whether any brain tissue leaks out. The harder tani nishvara esam afishal nikav krum shamayach. Then you say that the skull itself is broken, even if the membrane is not punctured. Then already the bird is trait amolestly, which means there's no checking. As soon as you find a hole or a problem in the skull, then immediately it's trait. The answer is seifa aston ma'ok shamayim. That last part about as soon as the skull is broken or punctured or whatever, the bird is trait is talking about water birds. Aim like krum, because water birds do not have a krum, do not have a membrane. What do you mean? Aim like krum. Aim like krum. What do you mean? It doesn't have a membrane. We talked before about membrane. Yeah. And we can see that it has. What it means is it has a membrane around the brain, but its membrane is extremely soft. So with regular animals and birds, even if the skull is punctured or broken or whatever, you can still have the membrane that's still going to remain intact. But with water birds, because the membranes around the brain are so soft, as soon as there's a problem with the skull, it's punctured or cracked or whatever, the krum is going to follow shortly after. Therefore, it's trait.
Water birds
with hashes means like ducks. But we'll see soon. Wait. Okay. More. Let's see. I know it's getting late over here. Let's run. Let's run until the two dots at the top of the next summer, and then we'll quit. Okay. Omelet of Nachman and of Onan, that of Nachman says to of Onan in this connection, Mar Omer Shmuel, you, Rebbe, have said that Shmuel said, that you said that Shmuel bodik v'yada, you said that Shmuel would check when a bird had been bitten by a weasel or whatever, or otherwise had skull punctured, that he would check using his fingers, umachsher, and he would declare it kosher on that basis. Rehuna Chavrin and Huna or colleague, meaning Rehuna, Omer Rav, he says that Rav did the same thing, bodik v'yada umachsher, he also tested his fingers and was able to declare it kosher on that basis. The problem with that is, v'hatani levi, treifas shemona chachamim v'behema, kinegdan v'oiv, all the treifas that we listed in the first Mishnah and in the Gemara on it, regarding animals, also apply to birds whenever they have the same organs. Yes, did I lay an oath? You have an additional trefa that applies only to a bird, not to an animal. Nishvara esem official and nikav krum shamayach. That if the skull is broken, even if the krum shamayach has not punctured. So what are they doing? Testing with their fingers and seeing, put pressure and see if any brain tissue is found. According to what Levi is saying, as soon as the skull is broken, it's trefa. And the answer is the same as before. Amalei, sort of Onan, answers to Rav Nachman, hahu ba'oif shamayim. That brisa that you just quoted from Levi is talking dafka about water.
Not
regularly. Not land.
And what is it, trefa?
Again, yeah, as soon as the skull is broken, then it's trefa. Hoyova ain't like krum because it doesn't have a krum. And again, the same question, ain't like krum, talk about it. What do you mean it doesn't have a krum? It does. Ela hoyola krum airach. What we mean is because the membranes around the brain are very soft. Okay. And another example where this point also comes up. Apparently, there were different times when they had to recheck on this. There was a case of a chicken in the household of Rav Chana that had been bitten on the head by a weasel. Shadra kamed Rav Masna, so he sent it to Rav Masna to ask the shayla. Nishvara etzem v'lenik of krum shomayach haboi. The case over here was only the skull had been broken, bitten through, but the krum shomayach had not been punctured. V'achshara, and Rav Masna declared it kosher. So again, Omalei, so again, the same thing. So Rav Chana asked him, while Tony Levi traces Shemona Chachamim and Behemoth connect them both, yes, sir, I'll lay an oath, Nishvara etzem v'lenik of nick of krum shomayach. So Levi is telling us that by birds, if the skull is broken, then already it's traced. Amalei, and again, Rav Masna gives him the same answer as before. Halfim ba'oif shamayim, all that's only talking about water birds. Hoyova ain like krum, because it doesn't have a krum. And again, he used the expression ain like krum, so the Gemara asks on that ain like krum talk that. That wouldn't even doesn't have a krum at all. Ela ema hoyola krum airach, it means because it has a soft krum, and therefore as soon as the skull is broken, then the krum is going to get punctured soon after. Okay. Now, more possible ways of checking. Before we talk about two possible ways of checking the krum shamayach, whether it was punctured. We said you could do it with the fingers, to press up or press down and see if any brain leaks out. We said you can check with a nail or a needle, run it along there gently and see if it catches. Two more ways, three more ways. Rav Shizvi bodik b'shimsha. Rav Shizvi would check it using the sun. He would take out the membrane and hold it up against the sun. If there was even a small puncture in it, then you'd see there would be the light would shine through. Rav Acha Bayachter, Rav Yema rather, Bodik Vamaya, Rav Yema would check it using water. Rashi has two explanations what it means with water. One explanation is he would take out all the brain from inside the krum, fill the krum with water, see if any leaks out, like we started talking about with the lung a few days ago. The other possibility, Rashi says, is he would leave the brain in there. What he would do is he would pour some water into there through the hole. Then he would turn it upside down or whatever to get the water out, see if the water that comes out is just as clear as when it came in. If it's just as clear as when it came in, then good. If not, if it's cloudy, then you know it means that brain tissue got mixed into it. Then it means the krum was punctured, and therefore it means it's straight. Rav Acha bar Yaakov bodik begila d'chichya. Rav Acha bar Yaakov would check it using a straw from a wheat stalk. Same idea as checking using a needle or a nail that we said before. Rub it along there gently and see whether it catches. Amar Rav Shizvi, one last thing. Rav Shizvi says on this: Hani avzi didon, or geese, since they spend a lot of time in the water, ka'oif shamayim damyim, they're considered for that purpose in halacha like water birds, and therefore if the skull alone gets punctured, then the bird is trefa. Right. And that's the halacha is, to be exact, we're not real sure what are any kind of ducks or any kind of geese or other birds like that, that's of that species, not chickens, for example, then yeah, if the skull is punctured, well, with that said, I mean, if you have reason to suspect that the krum are punctured, you have the usual rule that we usually say that we're not experts on bedikah, and therefore once you have any reason to be concerned that the krum are punctured, then it's trace misa. But yes, in principle, you would be able to do bedikah.